Hogstein.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to the Hogstie. It is your weekly update about all things Washington football, and we will not say the stupid name of the stupid team as much as we can avoid.
I have said that, but it doesn't mean you guys can't say the name of the team.
It still does not roll off the tongue well for me.
I've lost a lot of respect for you as a person because you bought a C-Words jersey, though.
I bought a Tressway jersey. Let's be clear.
No.
It was more about my love of Tressway than...
You could have found a Tressway jersey, a Redskins Tressway jersey, if you'd looked on eBay or somewhere.
Steve, do you think a lot of people are selling Redskins Tressway jerseys?
You want me to find one right now for you?
I would be curious if you could find a Tressway Redskins jersey on eBay.
We're going to do this live on the air, kids.
Loves punters more than me.
Very few people loves punters more than Alex Zeiss, I got to say.
No, I know that.
You will find the Tressway jersey on eBay, actually.
See, I don't think you will, because if you love punters that much, you're not selling your Tressway jersey. Like, it's one of those things. It's a collector's item to weirdos.
It belongs
in a museum.
Jersey. It may belong in a museum. Yeah, that's true.
It belongs in the Hall of Fame because he did have that one season as a Redskin. The best season any punter has ever had, single season wise. So.
Oh no!
You found five of them, didn't you?
No, I didn't actually. I found one. The top one is a new. Oh, wait a minute! Wait! What is this?
There you go.
This is super exciting for anyone listening.
It's the old retro one.
You found a retro one.
Yes, right there.
Wow.
And that is on...
It's not on eBay, though. It's on some other collector site, isn't it?
It's on My Gray Auctions.
Ah.
This is a Washington football team jersey.
That's close. I'll grant the Washington football team, since it's basically the same jersey.
It's not openly offensive, at least.
Commander's just as bad. Just as offensive.
But I don't see on eBay, at least in the first 10 hits.
Yeah.
Any Tressway. How much?
$37 on iMall.
Ooh, $37. That's got to be a knockoff then.
Dave bailed me out. Because I couldn't find one after I talked all that.
See that?
Yep. I see it.
There you go.
Or is that a McNabb jersey re-labeled on the back?
It doesn't matter. No.
I had the only McNabb Redskins jersey in existence. Don't worry about that one.
Oh no! When I went to the game that I went to the Packers game that season, and when McNabb won the game in overtime, I was really, really hammered and bought a McNabb jersey, which is even worse than the jersey.
Alex, so here's the question.
All my college friends. Yes.
You're the only one in D.C.
Sure.
You know, we like to laugh and make fun of the new name of the expansion team. It inhabits FedEx Field / Ral John / unnamed stadium. And I personally hate it. But yes. I'm wondering, what does the fan base in D.C. I'm not talking about the idiots on Twitter. I'm talking about the average person in D.C. What do they think?
Well, I don't know about all of them. I know a couple guys at work. No one necessarily loves the name. And most of the people I know who I work with, the only Commanders merchandise I see, it's free stuff that I know they got at games, because I got it at games. Like the free scarf they gave away, and I have a free lanyard that I use for work, that kind of stuff.
So then, is it therefore fair to say that
I don't
kind
think
of
it's
as
taken
a,
hold
as a generalization? There's probably a handful of sycophants out there that are, you know, yeehaw Commanders, right?
Oh sure,
but for the most part, people are indifferent at best. Maybe they can tolerate it, and then there's people like me who hate it. But most people dislike it, but can put up with it to a certain extent.
I think
that's what I'm seeing. Yeah.
If you ran a poll and you broke it off into the older generation, the younger generation, a lot, there's actually, from what I've seen, quite a bit of the younger generation who actually just don't mind the name or just love the name itself with Commanders, where you have people out there like you who just totally despises altogether, and people like me in that same group over there with you, it's like, well, I just treat the Commanders as an expansion team. So, and so, which I keep that clearly, so that's how I'm able to cope with it. You cope with your way, I do it my way, but that's in that generation where we totally hate the name in every aspect of it. And we get ridiculed for hating the name because it's just flat out a dumb name.
It's ridiculous.
It's a stupid name.
It's a ridiculous name. And I mean, and that's, of course, marketing 101, right? I mean, they, you know, they're going to bank on us
dying off.
Yeah, yes. Whereas yeah, the new crowd, they'll say, you know, you guys will get over it and everybody will get used to it and we won't have to spend money on it. And, but I just think it's disrespectful.
My counter to that is people still want the Wizards change back to the Bullets. It's been 25 years or more at this point, and people still hate the Bullets or hate the Wizards and want the Bullets back.
See, the Wizards didn't offend me. I mean, I was a Laker fan.
But like it's another name change. That everyone's like, right. Well, you know, people will get used to it. No, they never got used to it. Yeah. And by the way, Bullets is a terrible name for any sports team. It's just it doesn't have anything to do with the city. There was no, like...
Well, it was the murder capital of the world for the country for a time. I'd argue it had a lot to do with the city.
Well, and that's why they changed it, right? Like, that was the Apollon argument.
And the crime is going downhill again in your fair city, too, Alex.
I'm just saying... As far as an aesthetic and like a good name, it's not a good name. You know, Lakers, honestly, not a good name either.
Well, the Lakers came from Minneapolis, Minnesota. Yes,
and the Bullets came from Baltimore, where it rhymed. So.
Well, but you know, Minnesota is the land of a thousand lakes. And so it made sense in Minnesota. It doesn't make sense in Los Angeles.
Like, it doesn't make sense in a place that's a desert and, you know, has an ocean, correct. But that no lakes. Yes.
Correct. Yeah. But, you know, the funny thing about Commanders is, so there's two things that make it incredibly dumb. One, it's a mid-grade naval officer.
Right.
Is it not an admiral? You know, not, maybe, you know,
I like,
master
I've been
chief.
Rewatching a lot of Star Trek. I like to think that they're naming it after William T. Riker in Star
they're
Trek.
They're not. So you're naming either after a mid-grade naval officer or you're calling everybody a commander, which, of course, means nobody is a commander.
Right. I think we all know it doesn't make sense as a name. It never has.
I still ultimately think they're going to want to change the name.
I don't know, man. I mean, it sounds like Josh Harris is over it.
I think he's hoping it just catches on and they don't have to. But, like, they keep hedging their bets. It actually aggravates me. Like, they keep saying, well, we're not worried about it right now. All right, then I'm not going to buy anything right now. Like,
you can
that's
do
my...
two things at once also. Yeah. You know, yes, you can worry about it now, and you can do other things.
Sure. Yeah.
It's not a full-time job.
They're not you and me. They have sycophants who they can hire to do other
things.
They
have a large staff who can research it. Of course, he may be doing that. But maybe if you're going to change a name, you wouldn't want to say it out loud immediately, right? Because, you know, then you just tank the marketing for the current stupid name.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, they literally could be on the back end quietly trying to get the copyrights and everything to change it and just saying, hey, guys, we know it sucked. Here's the new name.
Don't make me start doing that again.
No, I'm not going to make you start. I'm just saying, like, if you had to do it, you're not going to spend like 2 years. What's the new name again?
At some point, they're going to have to deal with our buddy Phil McCauley if they do that, because he's got all of the copyrights.
Well, you go to Phil and say, here's $50, but give us this one.
Hey, Phil told me, I talked to that guy. Yes. If people forget, this is the guy who had a whole bunch of copyrights filed on a whole bunch of team names. And I talked to him twice.
Yep.
Maybe on the phone twice, I think. And he told me that he just did it as a hobby, which made no sense. He said he didn't want anything out of it. He said that he told me that he had offered the names to the team, and he sent me a copy of a letter that he had an attorney write to the team, and they ignored him. That's what he told me.
And it still doesn't pass the smell test, even with all that to me.
No, but the letter did. The letter passed the smell test. I believe, so I saw the letter.
I believe you saw the letter, and I believe, you know,
I still think his motivations don't pass the smell test at all. Yeah. No, no.
Yeah. There's no logic to that.
Because also, there's filing fees for this stuff. You can't just file a copyright. It costs a lot of money to do that. Even if you did it yourself, it costs money to file this
stuff. Now, that said, I have many hobbies. This is one of my hobbies. They all cost me money.
Not $200 a filing, they don't. Yeah, you don't.
No, no, no. And he had like dozens of filings. Yes. So that made no sense.
Yes.
But like this hobby cost me $200 a year. Painting costs me about $100 a year. You know, like hobbies.
If only your name was Biden, you could sell those paintings for millions of dollars each.
Or Bush. Bush has tons of paintings he's selling for millions.
George Bush has paintings?
Oh, yeah. You don't know that George Bush is a painter?
I didn't know George Bush is a painter.
Yeah. He sucks. But he's a painter, and his paintings sell for a lot of money because
of course he's not running for office, so there's a difference.
But I'm just saying, like, there's an old saying that, you know, the worst politicians all paint.
I think a lot of people think they can paint, and only a small handful actually can.
Yeah, I admit my art is bathroom quality at best. Like, if you hung it in your bathroom, you'd be fine with it, but that's it.
Listen, I am not Eddie Van Halen with a guitar.
Right.
I like to pretend I'm Eddie Van Halen with a guitar, and I can do a passing a rendition of it, perhaps. But at the end of the day, you're not a pro in your hobby, and I'm not a pro in my hobby.
No, we do them to keep us from, like, you know, punching through a wall every once in a while.
Correct.
Dave, what about you? Well, what do you do to keep, or do you just have holes in your
wall? Let's see. I just got done building a dining room table.
Oh, yeah, that's right. You're a craftsman is your thing.
Yeah, that's what I've been kind of delving into right now. In fact, I got done building a miter saw bench for myself. So I got that done. And so, I mean, that's what I'm getting myself into. And
you build a miter saw bench.
Yes, because every bench that I find that I need to that I would use for my miter saw, it's just a bit too high. Because, yes, because I am what, Steve? 4'10". Right.
Well, you are 4'10". So yeah, you have a little step stool that comes up to the.
No, because I brought the bench down to me.
Yeah, that's what I did.
Now, so when I built it, instead of having the usual typical height of roughly like 35, 36 inches high.
That's way too tall for you.
Tall for me. It's like the bar size, right?
Right. So I'm down to like, so I have it down to like 32, 33 inches in height.
Well, I understand because you're 4 foot.
So I built that for myself and I have it where it goes underneath. I put it on wheel casters and everything. And this week I'm going to get a little, and this week I got to get, these heavy duty rollers so I can have a little shelf on the bottom. I can roll it out, pick it straight up, put it on top and then boom.
That's what I want to know. When are you going to
get into lathing? That's what the real men do.
I'll tell you what I cannot
do. That is
do.
Definitely an objective down the road. But right now, not right now.
Sticking with the miter saw.
Well, yeah, one thing I cannot do at all is build stuff. Yeah. I can't build anything. The only tools I have, there is a small toolkit that came with this house, courtesy of the builder. I have that. And then I've got this fishing tackle box with like a hammer and a couple screwdrivers in it. I can't build anything to the point where it's like embarrassing. I'm embarrassingly bad at it.
Yeah.
I had to get guy to come in and put my claws, the clothes line thing pole in the master bedroom closet fell off the wall. I had to get a guy to pay a guy $100 to put the thing back up.
I see. And that's the one thing. My wife is massively OCD. I'm not to any extent, and sometimes I drive nuts how disorderly I can be. But when it comes to doing angles and keeping things level and having things at the right proportion and everything, I am highly meticulous at that. I actually scrapped my original dining room table top. I woke up in the morning. I told my wife I'm not happy with it. I'm scrapping it. She was like, "Oh my, you know what? That's a huge relief for me because I didn't know how to tell you that I didn't like it either." I was like, I already decided on that before I went to bed. Boom, I got rid of it, and I redid a new tabletop, and we both love it.
See, so every time I have to have something, every time I need something done, I go to the neighbor, this one neighbor, and I say, "Can you help me with this?" And he knows what that means, which is, "Can you do this for me?" And I'll stand and watch.
Right.
That's what he knows what that means. You know, like I had to put lights up on the house, the outdoor lights, because the light fixtures broke, and I thought, okay, I don't know, this is brick. Is this possible? You know, and he said, "Just shut up and let's go do it." And I handed him tools out of the box. He'd say, "Give me this thing," and I'd say, "What is that?" you know, and then I'd hand it to him.
Look, I'm all self-taught on that stuff because my dad, he was like Steve. He couldn't know the difference between a screwdriver and a hammer and didn't want to do any of that stuff. Right. So, like, after my parents got divorced, I started having to, like, self-teach myself everything about, like, how to take care of the house. I came from the Steve area. I don't have a miter saw. I still, honestly, am afraid of electric saws. So don't touch them.
By the way, welcome to the Hog's Die.
I got them. You know, like, I've built, like, little, my outdoor, like, cooking table. I built that for myself. Just, you know, miter box, normal saw. Just
right.
Doing that thing, but that's fine.
And here you were wondering what we were going to vamp about.
Yeah, there we go. And we're talking about wood.
We're 10 minutes into the show now. It's okay.
Oh, yeah. All right, fine. We should talk about what's going on with the team.
So last we left,
they had signed, I think, 15 free agents. They're now up to 20, I believe is the total magic number. Most of these are lower-end signings. They did sign two cornerbacks, Noah Igbinoghu and Michael Davis. One shocker, former Dallas corner. I think he was, their third corner that they signed?
At least, yeah, not if not lower.
He's a depth guy, but he was with Dan Quinn in Dallas, so that it makes sense. And then Davis was kind of like a spot starter for the Chargers. He played 13 games.
Called veteran depth. That's his role.
He's depth, which two good signings, I think, there. And then they re-signed Cornelius Lucas. That's the other big one.
I would say why.
Well, again, because they don't have anybody.
And so they still don't. Cornelius Lucas is not the answer to anything. I don't.
Lucas means you have a plan C, is what it means.
I guess.
The only thing Lucas represents is that that's how bad a depth we have in this offensive line. We have to turn back to him.
I mean, honestly, one mistake I think they're making in this offseason. I get it's a good draft for offensive linemen. And they probably think you could get a starter still in the second round, or they could maybe trade up and get a starter. You're taking a gamble. Don't take a gamble at left tackle. Bring in somebody. I don't care if they're 35 years old and it's a one-year rental. You need somebody.
Well, yeah, because they can't possibly believe in the group they have. I mean, surely not.
No.
I really think that the way this free agency has panned out for Washington – it 100% means that they're going to draft the quarterback with number two. Yes. And then the next pick, whatever it is going to be offensive tackle of some type. Well, I put this in my column, you know, when I did my roster review, you know, the column this week, I also think it's not beyond the realm of possible. They take both those second round picks and trade up if there's some tackle they like and the bottom of the first round is still there or something.
Yeah. And if there's a good trade partner, sure, I could see
it. Right.
I don't love it, but I could see it, you know.
Well, I have one theory that I'm trying to speak into existence because I think it works out for both Washington and the Chargers because the Chargers are still bad on salary cap issues. They're in a prime spot at pick 5 to draft a stud left tackle. They have already a stud left tackle on their team. You move a second, maybe like a second and a fifth this year and a future third, something like that, and you go get Slater from them, there's your anchor on the left side for the next 10 years down the road, and you have that resolved. You don't have to use assets to move up into to draft a potential left tackle. You go ahead and you trade for someone like Slater, and they can draft one of the top tackles in the league with Herbert still being protected on his blind side, and this receiver draft is so deep, they could use that second-round pick we give them to get that receiver that they need. I think it just works beautifully. That's what I'm kind of hoping happens with that. I'm speaking that into existence.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a terrible idea. I mean, it's a decent idea, but, I mean, is it likely?
Probably not.
No, but it's a decent idea. They need to do something because I don't know how you – can you really count on being able to find a starting left tackle at the top of round two. Can you really do that? And don't tell me Cornelius Lucas is the starting left tackle. He could be in an emergency, but...
Yeah, him re-signing, I don't think it was any indication that they think he's the starter.
Right. God help us, are they going to pass on quarterback with number two and go draft
that,
and then go find a quarterback somewhere lower in the draft, because there will be several. Maybe not great options, but...
The only thing you're getting early second round is either a starting right tackle or one of the top guards in the draft. You're not getting a left tackle in the early second round. Just like you guys said, you're going to have to trade back up into the first. But the only problem is that are you going to be able to trade up high enough into the first to get one of these guys? Because the top three or four tackles are going to be going the top 15 picks most likely.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the problem, right? I mean, here's the real problem. Fans want every problem to be solved with the new incoming administration, but you can't do it all. That's correct. The real problem. You cannot solve every problem in a year and in one off season. You know, they're going to do their best, but there's going to be some stuff that you just cannot get done. But that having been said, they need to have a freaking starting left tackle one way or the other here. They really do.
To kind of continue on that point though, like a lot of these signings, and I said, they've made 20 signings. Most of these guys are going to be here 1 year. Like, these are short-term stopgap solutions for a lot of them. Some of them might work out better than they expect, and they keep them on longer. But, you know, you didn't sign the linebacker from Seattle to be here 5 years. He's 36 years old or whatever, you know?
He's a stopgap.
Any left tackle left available in free agency right now, and I pulled up the list. So I'm going to say Dwayne Brown is out because he's 38 years old. He's got to be done, right? Like, that's not an option. But there's Donovan Smith, who was in Kansas City. Like, he's 30, but you could at least bring him in to fill the spot for a while at that age. You know, like, that's not the worst thing in the world. There's just not a lot of options left because Tyron Smith, I think, was probably the best one, and he is signed. So,
I mean, at the end of the day, they're going to have to draft somebody. It's as simple as that.
I think they're going to have to do both. Unless they feel very confident about trading up, I think
that's why I was surprised. That's why I was surprised they didn't at least call in Trent Brown from New England, who went to Jonah Williams, that was the left tackle for Cincinnati. I mean, both those guys are still out there. I'm surprised they didn't at least make an effort to talk to one of those two, because they're viable options, at least a left tackle.
Yeah, I mean, there are a couple options. Most of the guys who are left are kind of more your swing tackle caliber types. Mm-hmm. But, I think you just need bodies at this point. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's going to be tough, I think. I hope they're not just, like, banking on the draft, and then after the draft they're left scrambling. I think that would be a mistake.
But, okay.
Yeah.
Since we're talking about this, I have updated as much as I can, as I said, of the salary cap. I'm missing some. I just found Dante Fowler's contract while you guys were talking.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, one year, $3.25 million. He's got $1.43 million guaranteed, which is base plus a bonus, basically. Yeah. And so... where Washington is right now, and what I don't have in my chart is F.A. Obata, Anthony Pittman, Michael Davis, Noah Benny, that guy's name is. Don't have him. And Cornelius Lucas, that was as of yesterday. I haven't looked today. Jameson Crowder and Marcus Mariota. Missing those guys. Washington is at $63.9 million almost under the rule of 51. And so you got to add to that. That's what I'm missing. 4 or 5 more. So, you know,
We know Mariota is like a $6 million ish range.
Well, it's a bait. Yeah. Right. Yeah. So, you know, take 15 for another 15 off that, but then you got to throw, call it like a 10 to 12 million net. So that puts them down at like low 50s.
Yeah.
And then you got to take, then, so like the practical reality would be the the rookie draft pool is another 13, and so right. subtract that off it, and so now you're down to low 40s, and then you got to and then you got to put like a $10 million pad in it. So realistically, they're in like they've got like 20 high 20s left to spend if they wanted to. That's the cap update for you.
Right, and you know they can get. I mean, they still could get a couple good players with that.
Yes,
I guess
they could.
Point. You could find one or two of these starting tackle or veteran tackles you could bring in if you needed to, but they just don't seem to be making that move. It's very strange.
Well, part of it is, you know, good left tackles don't often come on the market. I don't know why they didn't go after Tyron Smith. I didn't understand that. I mean,
I think his price tag was way too high for them probably because he signed for almost $21 million.
They have $21 million.
I know, but they he signed the Jets for like 20 point some million dollars for the Jets for a one-year deal.
Let's find out, shall we?
No, I got it right here. It's $12 million.
I thought it said 20. Well, let's just talk about incentives bringing off the 20.
Maybe there's some incentives.
Tyron Smith signed a one-year $6.5 million contract with the Jets. One-year $6.5 million. $4.5 million signing bonus, 100% guaranteed. So $2 million base salary, no bonuses. So. Wait a minute.
It's weird because.
Okay, something's off about this because this same site says his cap hit is $12 million. So this data is off. Hold on.
Yeah, let me check are you looking at SpotTrack?
SpotTrack. Yeah, that's not right.
Let
me check one of my other sites. The other site I look at, it's got $12 million. Salary cap charge $6 million. Something's off about this.
I have from SI.com for the Jets. They say it was a maximum value deal of $20 million, but only $6.5 million is guaranteed.
Okay, I'll tell you what that means. That's what I think it is. After looking at both these sites, so when you see those things, that means they've got hard to reach bonuses built in there. Right. Like you win the Super Bowl, you get this. You become an All Pro, you get this. The NFL will count. The rules say if it's an easy to reach bonus, meaning you start 8 games, that's easy to reach, and then that counts against the salary cap. And so what it sounds to me like is Tyron Smith has got a bunch of really what they would call difficult to reach, hard to reach bonuses in it. That's probably what it is.
So a good example of this is
I'm sorry. Easy to reach bonuses because his cap it's 12, so they've got a bunch of easy to reach bonuses in it. That's what it is.
Chase Young, I'm sure you saw, signed with the Saints. And
see his contract, though.
So some things came out. One is that he gets about – it's like 470K per game that he actually starts. Because they made a big deal of it's a $13 million salary, which I think a lot of people were surprised by. But then you realize, oh, no, he's got a per-game bonus as part of his cap.
And when you're Chase Young, who's missed a bunch of time, that's not – Yeah, idea.
Part of his contract for the bonus that if he participates in at least 90% of the offensive snaps this season, he has a shot at the maximum package, is what they describe it as.
Yeah.
So I'm sure there's probably other bonuses in there that kind of tie in with that too. But in order for him to get the maximum deal, part of that is he has to be in 90% of the offensive snaps, and he hasn't done that since 2015.
Yeah.
So.
So there, you know, his number has a lot of caveats in it. We were talking about New Orleans pre-show, unrelated, but I expect Chase Young to get fat. Pre-show discussion.
There's a lot of very heavy people in New Orleans because of the food. Along the Gulf Coast, there was a lot of people who are obese because of the food. That's what was what you're talking about. But why don't we stick to football? I had to blurt it out, Alex.
Fine. I mean, I
wasn't disrespectful. I mean,
no.
It's also the truth.
It is the truth. And I expect Chase Young to get more obese and not choke to practice. Because that's what Chase Young does. good luck with him, New Orleans. He's your problem now.
so we talked about quarterbacks.
Yeah, let's talk about the quarterback situation real quick, because the day after the show came out, or the day the show came out, I can't remember quite which, Washington traded their starting quarterback from last year, Sam Howell, which they now, I want to talk to you both. Were you guys surprised by this? And then your thoughts on the trade value that they got for him.
I wasn't surprised really, because they're starting over with this team. And sure. What I think you don't want is to have, he wasn't going to start no matter what the fans thought. He wasn't good enough last year. It wasn't going to happen. He wasn't going to start, and they wanted to have somebody to market anyway. So you don't want that guy from last year hanging around. It's kind of like having your ex-girlfriend, you know, live in the spare bedroom. You know, he had to go for that reason. And I thought, would they get a fourth round, you know, a sixth that escalates to a fourth?
A double trade up, basically.
Yeah, that's what it was. It was Washington traded like a fourth and a sixth and got like a third and a fifth.
The exact picks are they traded pick 102 and 179. That's fourth and sixth round. And they got pick 78 and 152. So both move up about 30 spots.
It's a very small benefit, but that's what you're going to get with a guy who's worth probably like backup quarterback value.
Right.
Well, you know, I wasn't surprised by the move. I thought a nice fresh starter was needed for him. And I think he actually goes in a good situation out there, be behind Geno Smith, get a chance to kind of reset himself and develop. You know, and at first, the trade package, I was like, whatever, it seems okay. But after I saw the Pickett deal, the Kenny Pickett trade, the trade from Justin Fields, I'm like, you know, I think we actually got apparently very good value out of that, because, I mean, we got more out of the Sam Howell situation than these guys have with higher draft picks that they moved on. You know, so we took a fifth-round draft pick and got that, but you had two other first-round picks. Now, granted, they weren't. I mean, it's not that they warranted a higher draft capital or trade value back, but it was like you had two former first round picks. You got what, a conditional six for Fields, and
yeah, and then Pickett like was a fourth plus Pickett for a third and a seventh.
Yeah,
so another trade up, and then they threw in a seventh round pick.
Yeah,
so you know, which you know,
I
which
wasn't...
is a better trade? I don't really know. Between Pickett and Howell?
I think the value that they got was, I mean, it was a bit strange of a trade. You know, I don't know why you couldn't just decide on a six-round pick or whatever, but I thought it was in the ballpark of reasonable, put that way. That's what I thought.
Yeah. The Fields trade was surprising how little they got for Fields.
Yes, that was, yes, I agree.
I often wonder that maybe it was a situation where they told Fields, where do you want to go?
Mm-hmm.
And that was probably one of his spots, and he probably did him a service in it, because nobody was racing to Chicago to give anything of real significant value, and Chicago wanted to move on. So, I mean, they kind of it seemed like more of a trade where they appeased Fields more so than them getting value in return, because let's be honest, they got no value in return at all. They would have been much better off just keeping Fields and waiting until a team lost a starter.
Well, see, but it's the same thing though, Dave. They're going to start over. They've decided Fields is not it. And so in that case, you have to cut it out and get him gone.
No,
and
I agree. Start out. Yeah.
That's what it is.
Sure.
And I understand that. It's just, to me, what makes no sense for Justin Fields is the Steelers already traded for Russell Wilson. And you know that. Like, yeah, it's Justin Fields. He's well aware of where everyone's moving. Like, are you trying to... Are you going here to try and be a backup now for a year?
It's
like,
not a bad idea, actually, to be honest, because, I mean, Russell Wilson is in his late 30s at this point, is he not? I mean, he's not going to be there long, and he had a really, really horrible, terrible year on top of that. And so I think if I were Justin Field, it may be a situation where I can see an opportunity. In the worst-case scenario, I'm going to get an opportunity at some point in the next year or two. And in the best case scenario, maybe you sit and you learn behind somebody who's, you know, had a great career, you know, he knows he's on a bit negative track now. He needs to revive himself.
Right.
I think you could do worse.
I mean, you might be right. And sitting there and being under Tomlin, who by all accounts is, you know, a great leader.
Yeah,
coach.
Exactly.
And maybe you do pick up some stuff from Russell Wilson, who was at one time the mobile strong arm quarterback, kind of like Justin Fields. I mean, you're not crazy there, but it seemed to me that, at least from the outside, it initially looked like the Steelers were going with Wilson and hoping for him to be like a guy for 2 or 3 years, not like this is a 1 year rental.
Well, we'll see.
Yeah.
Well, I think for Fields, it was an ideal spot for him anyway, because the Steelers are a run first, run oriented team, and they play typically very good to great defense out there. You know, you put Fields on a team like that to where now your focus is the run, you play off the play action, you can now incorporate RPOs with Fields. There's a lot less pressure on his shoulders to have to do anything outside of that. So now you can allow him to be the playmaker. Because I watched him in Ohio State. I know he has a good arm. He may not be a typical passer from the pocket in terms of going through progressions that you may want from him to be. He may not be that kind of quarterback, but he is a good or decent to good quarterback. But you have to get him in the right system. You have to have him in an ideal situation that will allow him to flourish to where he needs to be, like he was in Ohio State.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's where he could be with the Steelers right there, in my opinion. But
I would say everything you said about him, you could have said about a young Russell Wilson.
Yes, that's true.
I keep repeating it over and over again on this show. I mean, so much of quarterback development is situational. And I think the NFL has done, especially recently, the NFL has done a really horrible, terrible, awful job at developing quarterbacks. They are so little patience now. Look at the Packers. Mm-hmm. They're the ones who've done great things, as we talked about a couple weeks ago.
Yep.
Washington, on the other hand, has thrown away multiple highly drafted quarterbacks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in the case of Dwayne Haskins, rest in peace, they gave him, like, what, half a season at most, and they were done with him completely. Now, you put him in a better situation, let him develop a year, and who knows, maybe he could have become a starter.
Yeah, maybe.
But there's so little patience now, and I don't think that these NFL coaches really have a great understanding of the differences between the college game and the NFL game. Obviously, I came out wrong. Obviously, they do, but I don't think they can really fully appreciate the fact that these quarterbacks, what they're getting out of college is not what the traditional pro quarterback is, and they need to adapt.
I think that's a lot of it. And even in the case of like a Haskins, even if, let's say, Jay Gruden had wanted to develop Haskins, he was not going to be.
And Jay Gruden was being a real snot about it.
Yeah. Well, yes. But he was not going to be given the ability to do that by Dan Snyder and the ownership and the fan base, because this guy was drafted high. And, you know, if he came in and Gruden said he needs a season or two to sit and learn, which he probably did. Haskins was very rough,
right?
And raw.
Hadn't played much.
No, he hadn't played much. He had a lot of mechanical issues and a lot of stuff that needed to develop. Who's going to let him? Who's going to tell Jay Gruden, yeah, that's fine, you can just play whoever in front of him for a year or two? No, no owner would do that, especially not a Dan Snyder back in the day. But
you can't use Washington as a good example because they were
just
a train wreck.
I'm just using that example because you brought up. I still think that the old school let a guy sit mentality is generally beneficial, even for the best quarterbacks.
I think it's 100%. I think you're 100% right.
Yeah.
Totally. Well, I think right now, I think teams are in a race to get something going with their organization, a possible championship on that rookie deal before the quarterbacks potentially make these 40, 50 plus million dollar a year contracts, and then that start trickling down through your rest of the lineup in terms of where you can spend money salary cap wise and everything. I think they're so hyper focused on that in some scenarios, not all cases, but in some scenarios, and that hampers that development. And I agree with you guys, they should at least sit for a year, develop and get adjusted to the game. The speed of the game is so much different, obviously, in the NFL, you know, and if you're not a quarterback that can go through progressions and reads, you absolutely should sit for a year, because in the NFL, to survive, you got to be able to go through those progressions and reads like that to some level. Maybe not to a level you see like Mahomes and all them, but you have to be able to achieve that to some degree.
Washington needs to do that for this quarterback they're bringing in this draft. But they won't, but they should.
No, they. I mean,
they really ought to let Marcus
Mariota starting
start
a couple games, and I hope that happens just because I think it will help the younger quarterback whoever they draft. But you know, I this fan base won't be able to contain itself. If they have Drake May or Daniel sitting on the sideline, they're not going to be able to handle it.
I think with it being Quinn's first year, I think he can think in the back of his mind, well, I can afford at least a half a season of mediocre play at the quarterback play to allow my quarterback some amount of time of development and block out the noise, because you know he's going to get more than a year as a head coach to do something. Mm-hmm. He's going to get at least 3 years. So if he can allow this guy to develop and be patient and deal with the and just ignore the outside noise, and then come into next year with a quarterback who's ready to go, then all that noise will go away, because now everyone's rah, 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 all happy because we got a franchise quarterback.
Okay, I also think we don't overlook, you need to give a new roster time to gel, especially the line.
Absolutely.
So
I've been plugging more data into my huge, massive spreadsheet during the show here. If you've heard typing, that's what it is. And now I'm down to only Michael Davis, Noah Igbinoghi, and Cornelius Lucas. And with that plugged in, we're down to $57.5 million left under the rule of 51, which then subtract 13-ish for the draft picks. Now you're down to 40, you know, four something. And then another 10 or so. So they actually have more than I thought, because some of these contracts I found were smaller than I thought they'd be. So that's, you're really down to high 30s in terms of available cap space. So there you go. Update.
And I would like to point out, Steve and I have now given this pronunciation about six different pronunciations.
I know. What?
Noah Igbinoghi, Henny. You know,
Washington used to send out a pronunciation guide back when we were on good terms with them. And since we're not anymore, they don't.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. All the people we were on bad terms with are also fired at this point.
That's true. We could maybe get plugged back in.
Yeah. All right. We did a lot of nonsense talk at the beginning of the show. We really should also do our routine. We got to talk about running backs and tight ends in the draft.
We need to catch up with the draft.
We need to play some catch up here and talk about two positions. So Dave, you've been doing those write ups. Right.
I did both of them, actually.
Yep. Yes. And I know not a good running back class. There's some interesting names at tight end. Which one would you like to start with? Dealer's choice.
Let's start with the tight end side first.
Okay.
I like that one. Because I'm going to just skip over Brock Bowers. We all know who Brock Bowers is. He's going to be a mid-first-round pick. He's not even going to be on the radar for this team.
Right.
They're going to worry about that. The one name that really stands, who's great at the second best tight end in this draft, is a guy that I like a lot. A guy that will be there in the early to mid second round, if we take a second round pick for a tight end, would be Jatavion Sanders out of Texas.
Mm-hmm.
This guy has got a lot of similarities to Jordan Reed. He's an excellent route runner. He's got great size for a tight end. He's not a great inline blocker like Jordan Reed. He's not a guy that you're going to count on for pass protection very often. Run block and forget that. But he is a good blocker out in the open field. So out in screens and stuff, he will actually help pave the way. But as far as his catch radius, as far as his lateral movements, especially his transitions into routes, are very, very seamless. And once he gets the ball in hand, he's very, very quick in transition into getting upfield, a real quick burst to get downfield. I mean, this is a guy right here that you can line up a tight end or move him out for a mismatch out in the slot. This guy right here is probably a Cliff Kingsbury type of tight end right there, because he can flex him out as a wide receiver if he wanted to. Yeah. You know, and his size and his numbers, it was 6'4", 240 pounds. He runs a 4.69 40, and he runs a 20-yard shuttle at 4.32, which is actually the best number. The second the third best number in the combine, third or fourth. But either way, that just talks about more the short area quickness and burst that he has, especially coming off the line. So he's got quick and excellent burst first step off the line and everything. That's a guy I like the most in this whole entire class outside of Bowers.
Here's the thing. Now, from a raw, like, look at the tight end class, I agree with you. Now, if you focus on, you know, Washington needs a tight end.
Yes.
My problem with it is that there's much bigger needs in tight end right now at the top of the draft. So I don't think Washington would be in a position to be able to draft him. And so what I had looked at it, and I, you and I went back and forth, you know, and what the guy I had identified was Dalen Holker from Colorado State.
Yes.
And the reason why I said that, this is a mid-round guy who I think is more of a classic tight end, who is a decent blocker, can run block, can catch. He's not going to wow anybody. It, you know, it's not Rob Gronkowski, but he can kind of, he's a B-minus player who can come in and actually block, and he can actually catch a little bit and be plugged into a traditional offense. And if Washington could burn a high draft pick, I 100% agree with you. That's the guy. Brock Bowers, Jatavion Sanders, granted. But if you can't and you need to find someone who's in the mid-round, I want them to find a guy who can actually block and be an inline tight end. And I think that is Dalen Holker.
I mean, one thing to point out, slowest 40 time of all the tight ends at the combine. Not that that is a be-all end-all.
Yeah, I know. But that's what you're going to get in like the fifth round, you know.
But see, the one thing about Dalen Holker, the Hawker, that I do like about him too is that his shuttle, his 20-yard shuttle time was 4.21, which means he's got a very quick first step. He's very decisive in his movements, so that's how he creates his separation. He's never going to break that top off the defense. He's never going to get you that 30, 40-yard gain downfield. But what he will give you, especially with a 10-foot-2-inch broad jump, he's going to give you a good, nice, reliable red zone target. And on top of that, because of his size and his ability to block, you can keep him in on the short area run game, especially in the red zone, to block as well. So that's why I like him as well, too. I do like him as a more of a mid-round pick. And this is a guy that was number two on my list, right behind what you're talking about, because that's a guy right there most likely is a guy that we would probably look at, because we have other needs early on that we want to get to address.
And that
first.
Was my point with yes. you. You know, that was my yes. point. Like, so yes. there you go. So the top of the group, the obvious, Brock Bowers, Jatavion Sanders. If you want the mid-round sleeper pick, go with Dalen Holker.
I've always also liked the kid out of TCU, Jared Wiley, mostly just because I think – now, I noticed the combine that he's listed as 6'6". I saw him listed as 6'8 at one point. So
even if he's only 6'6", that's still enormous.
You know me, I'm desperate for this team to have some bigger targets. So, like, I'm fine finding a tight end who can just be a giant in the end zone for him. So
there you go. That's him.
That's my primary motivation. We need height.
Doesn't matter. Just get a tall dude in there. It doesn't matter anything else. Just tall.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Go recruit like a power forward from the NBA, maybe.
Yeah. I've always loved the idea of the power forward playing tight end. Like,
that's
back in the day.
That's essentially LeBron James.
Right.
There was all those rumors he wanted to play football and all of that. He would have been a tight end.
Oh, absolutely. He would have.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And anyone past that, you're talking, you're looking at Cole Turner type of, you know, raw talent may have upside, you know, someone like a, Devin Culp or Brevin Spanford from Minnesota or something like that. But they're guys that, you know, you're back into the tight end room, special teams guys, you know, but.
So there you go, kids. For all you tight end freaks out there, there you go.
There's probably only one or two guys in this tight end class that are, like, viewed as like, probable starters, right? Or maybe three, because Stover would probably be also viewed as someone who can –
Maybe play time. I mean, he was graded out as a starter, you know.
Yeah. And he's another one that's probably going to be gone by the second, third round, would be my guess.
Yes.
So.
And there's one Penn State guy in here that I absolutely will not rave about in Theo Johnson, because he's a guy Like on here, he even talks about everything that I talked about, which is what I see when I play. He tends to get real high. He keeps his body exposed, you know, in terms of, you know, pass rusher, pass protection. And he's explosive off the line, but he's not great in getting into his routes, you know, and he will have the, you know, real bad drop timing or bad drops because of lack of focus at times, stuff like that. But he's a guy I completely stay away with, even though he has size, he has speed and excellent shuttle time. I just don't trust his hands, and he definitely will not be any form of a real good blocker for you at all.
Well, my guess is that he has an excellent burst in shuttle time because he's having to run and dodge, you know, coaches from chasing him in the shower.
There it is.
Steve will have one joke for every. He has one joke for my school, one joke for your school.
Well, see, that's part of the reason why.
Okay,
the reason why I had to bring up the name Theo Johnson anyway. Just so we get that in the show.
I get it. I totally get it.
I will never let the Penn State thing go, Dave. I'm never going to let
okay.
it go.
That's okay.
Just like the Penn State coaches never let go of the children.
See, you're doing it too. Congratulations. And I've had two jokes with you, Alex, now, by the way. We've gone from Matt Ioannidis to the long snapper. The kicker?
Brandon McManus, kicker. Yes. Yes. Well, and you there was another guy in between. The other guy from Temple who was here briefly.
Oh, I forgot you had another dude. Yeah.
Temple actually puts out, you know, occasional football players, unlike somebody's alma mater.
It's almost like you're the gatekeeper. It's like they got to hit Alex, you know, to get on Washington. Yeah.
Right. That's exactly how it goes. All right, let's switch up, talk about running backs, because it's going to be a shorter conversation, and not because the running backs are all short, but...
They are short.
Actually, there are quite a few short ones on there.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I think we're back into the era of the short man running back.
Well, they were never tall men.
Well, you know, you occasionally had like the 6'1", 250-pound guys back in the day. You know, battling ran, but that's gone, sadly.
Why don't you tell us, right. Dave? Running backs.
Right, well, running backs. It's for the top of the list. Anywhere I go, it kind of flip flops on who the top running back in the draft is, whether Jonathan Brooks at Texas or Jalen Wright in Tennessee. Myself, if I had to pick one, I'd probably go with Jalen Wright out of Tennessee at 5'10", 210 pounds, running the 4.38 40, 11.2 broad jump with a 1.55 second 10-yard split. What I like about him, he's a very extremely patient runner, good to excellent vision, very decisive in his moves, but he's a very natural pass catcher. Does need refinement in his route running and everything, but he runs with a lot of violence at the end of his runs. He's always hitting positive gains, but he's a very good speedy back. He'll get the play to the outside, and he's a guy that you can take and flex him out into the slot if you wanted to. He's a guy that will hit that home run ball. But the only thing, just like with Jonathan Brooks, either one of these two guys, in order to get them in the draft, you're going to have to use one of those picks that you want to use for an offensive lineman. Unless you maneuver, push one of them second-round picks back further, so you maybe get one of these two guys that slipped in the mid-second round.
I don't think they can afford to do that.
No, I don't either, but I'm just saying that's probably the only way. They want one of these guys. That's really the only way because they have to make sure they focus on the offensive line.
Yeah, I don't think, you know, they brought in Austin Ekeler, and I think that's the running back. Right. They may draft a guy in the, you know, they always bring in a running back at the bottom of the draft or something, but I don't think it's Washington's year for starting level running back. You know, I think of starters. I did that draft analysis. That was one of my best works, candidly. And, like rounds three and up are the starters, basically.
Right.
You're banking on anyone in those rounds to be a starter.
Yes, right. And I just don't think it's Washington's year for running backs in rounds 1 through 3.
Right.
No, I could see them spending that fifth round pick on a running back, though, and that wouldn't shock me because, I mean, yeah, they have Brian Robinson and we got Ekeler now, but like you said, you always add a running back, it seems like.
I think once you get down into like rounds 5, 6, and 7, at that point you should just be drafting whoever the best player is, you know, because you're not filling needs really at that point.
Just take a shot at a guy.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Occasionally you'll see. Well, it's still best player generally, but like they'll focus on looking for some special teams help there too.
Yeah. You
know, right.
That's what you're doing there. But it widely seems like this is not a good running back class. From everything I read about the draft, it's very average. Most of these guys will be second rounders, third rounders who get a shot. Yeah, no one really stands out a whole lot. Wright, I guess, had a pretty good combine, pretty good. His name has definitely been the one I've heard, like you said.
I don't think there's anybody in this group who's expected to be, like Saquon Barkley level or anything like that.
Yeah.
Dave, I mean, I think one name we'd be remiss to mention, two of them. One is Frank Gore Jr., just because of his name and just because of who he is. And so your thoughts on that. And the other one is Marshawn Lloyd from USC. He had his moments, and I think he's pretty well known on top of the ones you've thought. So what do you think about either one of those two guys?
I don't know a great deal about Gore Jr. I actually don't even have him on my list, to be honest with you, but I'll look more into that one.
Oh, fair enough.
I actually didn't even have him on my list, to be honest
with you. He's not highly ranked. I didn't mean to sandbag you with it.
No, that's fine, because I'll actually look at that.
People get hooked on names, you know.
Yeah.
Well, I usually generate a notable section on my list anyway, so I don't have in my article just yet. So that'll be a name I can look at. But
there you go. You've got another day to do it.
I mean, have this draft is actually wild in that I think you've got three guys who are the sons of three Hall of Fame caliber players. Frank Gore Jr., you got obviously Harrison Jr., then you got Jerry Rice's son playing. And
I don't think Jerry Rice is at the same level as Harrison and even Gore, though.
You don't think Jerry Rice is at?
No, the son.
Oh, no. He's not at that same level.
Right.
But
Jerry Rice obviously is the best receiver ever. Don't get me wrong.
That's what I thought you were saying. I was very confused for a second. what's Jerry Rice's son's name? I think it's
Jerry Rice Jr., is it not?
Is he Jerry Rice Jr.?
Maybe. Well, while you're doing that, Dave,
I'm going to look for him real quick just
Marshawn
to confirm.
Marshawn Lloyd.
He is out of USC. He is a guy who's has a very quick burst and acceleration, after the snap. He's a guy with very, very good balance and lateral movement. He has very good body control. He's a guy that runs through contact. He's a guy who gets positive yards. He's a guy who's very tough to bring down. He's elusive. The only thing that I really saw on him that I read up on is, and that would be a concern with me, is his vision and his impatience for allowing running lanes to develop and ahead of him. And plus, he carries the ball too low far too many times, which can result in the turnovers. There are two things, there are two negatives that's been pretty common on most sites. And I use mostly DraftBuzz. I kind of tend to like that site quite a bit. But even with Lance Zierlein, he talks about that. Having that lack, because he's not a pure pass catching running back, but he won't be a liability in the receiving game either. I mean, he's good on screens and so forth. He's not a refined route runner, but when you're carrying the ball as low as you are, and if you're an impatient runner, not allowing the blocks to happen in front of you and getting these lanes open, where you even have the vision to see a different lane to cut back into, those things are kind of concerning. If you're unable to do that consistently at the college level, how well are you going to be able to do that in the NFL? So that's something he's going to have to develop from.
Well, I throw in there that USC has a really terrible offensive line, and so I respect
which is running true,
backs
yes,
who
right?
make, who can make something out of nothing. And that's part of, we'll get into quarterbacks another week, but, Caleb Williams is being chased around constantly.
Right.
As is Marshawn Lloyd, so.
Which with Marshawn Lloyd, that could wind up being one of those gems you find in that mid round.
That's why I brought him up. That's why I brought him up for that reason.
So sure, I mean he he runs a 4.46 40, mm-hmm. And his 10-yard split is not bad. He's just over a second and a half when he runs it, So he definitely has good short area burst and quickness. So in open field space, he's going to still be effective for you too. So, I mean, yeah, I mean, he could wind up being a mid-round steal. It really could be. And a guy could develop behind Eckler, get that ball up higher, and learn to adjust more with the vision that he may have, or that he may lack on. But like you said, it could just be purely offensive line where most of those issues occurred anyway, too. So,
By the way, it's Brendan Rice.
Brendan Rice. Okay, I was wrong.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, yeah.
It was a test. I knew that all along. It was a test.
Yes. yeah. I think they'll take a gamble on a running back, no matter what. And, you know, sometimes it works out. Sometimes you find an Alfred Morris. So
just generally speaking, always draft a running back.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. It just the economics of the game, it makes sense to do it every year. Yes,
exactly.
If they want to run a fullback, if they want to have a fullback in this offense at all, Cody Schrader from Missouri would be that ideal guy. I mean, he runs a 4.6, 140, so he's not a blazing speed. You know, he has over a second and a half 10-yard split, which isn't bad. You know, he's a stocky guy, 5'8", 202, but he is an excellent pass and run blocker. He is a guy that's decent hand, almost like a lighter weight Kyle Husek out of San Francisco. So if you're looking at a guy that could fill a role of a fullback,
Clint, 202 is pretty small for fullback.
Well, you're right. But what he has very low. He keeps a very good low center of gravity. He uses his legs and his power of his legs very, very effectively in his blocks. And he does well in getting good angles, and he forces rushers to the outside, and he gets to the inside shoulders when he has to. And so it's more or less, he's not going to rock anybody off their feet, but he's a guy that can get in, engage in his blocks, and he can hold it enough for the running back to get by, which is very important. And if you could do that, keep a low center of gravity, you can offset that lower amount of weight and size that you may have. So
keep telling yourself that.
I'm just saying.
It's pretty small for a fullback.
No, you're right. I get that.
I understand your point. You know, leverage. Yeah. I get it. You know, but it's still pretty small.
Yeah. So Mike Sellers, if he wants to come play fullback, and we can take him and Jaden Daniels out to Five Guys every day for breakfast, lunch, and dinner to put on some weight.
Just eat pizza all the time.
Yeah, pizza and burgers nonstop. That like this is the Alex is your dietitian plan here. We're
going sure to
draft small
wrong.
Athletes, but we'll fatten you up.
Things sure to go wrong.
We all right. A couple
you
things.
And
you
and Brandon could cook for him every night.
Yeah, there you go. Well, no, we're not. Steve, we're trying to gain weight. You gotta
throw burgers and bacon and on the grill every night.
Fast food is so much more unhealthy. That's the point. You know, more sodium, more fat. That's the key.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
If I cook a burger at home, I'm using 93.7 beef. It's
We don't want that. No, we don't want that. Yeah, that's no good. Exactly. Yeah.
Real quick, some other NFL topics we need to touch on before we go. Aaron Donald retiring. A lot of discussion. Is he the greatest defensive tackle of all time? No. The answer is no, probably, because
I mean, it's recency bias.
Yeah, of course. He is a Hall of Famer, though.
Absolutely.
No
first ballot, yeah.
Yeah. Congratulations on a great career to him. The NFL is doing their rule changes festival right now. They love to do this. They change all these stupid rules all the time and make the game worse. Two big ones they're talking about. They are talking about changing the kickoff rules to the ones that they used in the XFL in 2000 and 2003, or 2020 and 2020.
Okay, Alex, tell us what that was, because you're the one person that watched the XFL.
All right, the rule was instead of having players line up by where the ball's kicked off, you line up closer to where the returner would be. That's where the line of scrimmage between both sides is. That way you're slowing down that running start that causes all the injuries by the coverage team is the general concept. So they line up 5 yards apart at the 35 by the returner. Kicker kicks off from where he normally kicks off. And the returner is trying to get through a scrum that's right in front of him when he catches the ball. The fun part is, technically, if you kick the ball into the end zone in the XFL, at least, it was almost like a safety. It went out to the 40. So, like, they forced you to return the ball in the XFL. I don't know if the NFL would do that.
NFL's not going to do that.
Yeah. But that was
NFL's their... almost to the point where they kind of want to get rid of the kickoff.
Yeah.
They'd have fans up in arms if they actually did it. But the rules right. they've done essentially if you look at the stats for kickoff returns last year, there's hardly any.
Yeah, I think it was like down to 10% or something.
Yeah, some number like that. Yeah. Yeah.
The other rule they're talking about is a ban on the hip drop tackle. We were talking about it before the show. It's so hard to enforce something like that. That's the real problem. Because you got way too many moving parts in the act of tackling somebody from behind.
What is the form hip drop tackle?
It's basically when you tackle someone from behind around their waist, and then you just dead leg and drop your weight to stop them as the tackler.
This turned into flag football.
Yeah. I don't know how you ban this without making tackling impossible, honestly. It just means you can't ever tackle someone from behind anymore.
I think what led to that was there were two tackles last year by using just that, and you saw as soon as a defender grabbed from behind, you literally saw him look down, almost like he was targeting the lower leg, and just drop straight down and try to actually purposely injure him. Whether that's really more just perception and not really reality, whatever it is. So when you see that, you're looking at, well, he's a dirty player. He tried to intentionally hurt him. When that could really, in reality, is probably not true at all. You know, and you saw that a couple of times last year, and they're trying to just stop. And I get why they want to try to stop it. But you know what? My problem that I have is they want to focus on that, and yet they have no problem having these undersized corners taking an absolute dive below the knees of these larger tight ends, these bigger receivers, because they don't want to square up and tackle them. They are targeting their knees and just below. No flags ever get thrown. But let's go ahead and try to get rid of this tackle that happens more times than not that you can barely even control. And it's a judgment call anyways, to begin with anyway. Was he really doing a hip drop tackle or was he not? We have no idea. Oh, well, let's waste 20 minutes on instant replay to see if they were. Why not?
Yeah, the refs don't either. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. So
it's one thing to be like helmet to helmet. Easy.
Right.
Right. We get it. But
or if you're launching like that and
my advice to the NFL is to stop tinkering with the rules.
Yeah. Stop tinkering with the rules and start tinkering with actually teaching guys the fundamentals again. Because you know what? When you had longer practices and players sat there and learned how to wrap up and tackle, it was a little safer. You know, like teach guys the basics. Just because they're pros doesn't mean you don't need to keep on reteaching them.
They can't increase practice time, though. It is what it is.
Yeah,
it's in
I know.
The collective bargaining agreement.
I know, but you guys are in the military. You still have to go out to the rifle range every once in a while, right? Like, it's not like once you learned it, you learned it.
Right.
You still
there wasn't a collective bargaining agreement in the military.
No, there is not. That is true. But that's my larger point.
I agree with you in the larger point.
And you're absolutely right, because, I mean, I go back to when I played football in high school. I'm sure the same with you too, Steve, is, you know, how we learn, you know, you take your helmet, you shoot off to the hip, you drive your shoulder in there, you wrap, and you slide down the legs and you twist or something of that nature, whatever.
We did form tackling drills.
Right, absolutely. Yeah. And you know what? And I was able to tackle guys that were twice my size because, granted, when they fell on top of me because they still drive through my tackle. But when I hit there and I hit that form, I was able to at least get them to start coming. If nothing else, I'd at least slow them down for someone to come in and clean it up.
And when Dave says twice his size, he means that in a literal sense.
Yeah.
You ain't kidding about that.
He was about 4'8" in high school.
And 100 pounds versus a 230-pound fat kid, you know?
There you go.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's funny you say that because you say that as a joke, but you're not wrong. There are some guys I actually literally hurt my neck looking up to.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah, there's definitely they need to go back to just learning some fundamentals, I think, first.
Oh, sure.
We start banning anything else. All right, guys, that should wrap us up this week. I think we did it. We did a whole show again. Congratulations, Josh.
We got through another one. It's
we got through it. We might have had to talk about Dave's wood shop, but, you know, it's all good.
Hey, listen. In about a year, we might have a place on the Hogstye to sell some of this stuff. Who knows?
Dave's wood
with the Hogstye logo on it.
I'll think about it.
There you go.
We'll see. Not a bad idea.
Wonderful whittling world of Dave.
There you go. I love that. Podcast. I love that.
All right, everyone. You all have a good night.
Later.